I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
Eric, how was Danny's B-Day?
It was so much fun. We had a beautiful time down at the Jersey Shore, and I actually have a fantastic story for you about our experience there. So I think I had mentioned on the podcast last week that we were staying at the Berkeley Hotel, and what I found out right before going down was that the Manzos, Chris and Albie, are redoing the restaurant there. They're doing like all food and beverage and kind of redoing everything that they have. So we were like, oh my God, well, if we, you know, see them down there, I'll definitely say hi because we interviewed them last year for the podcast. And obviously it's the Manzo family, like, hello. So we get down there, we see Greg Bennett at the pool, who you guys may know from Real Housewives of New Jersey. He was friends with the Manzo family. And I saw him at Danny Pellegrino's show last year when he did a live show here in New York. So we saw Greg and we were like, okay, that's happening, whatever. Then overnight on Saturday night while we were staying there, someone overflowed their bathtub on the sixth floor and the fire alarm went off. So everyone
had those two things don't really make sense.
Well, that's what I was like, did someone pull the fire alarm? Did the water cause this? Like, I don't actually know the sequence of events, but that was like what you heard from like staff and things. So we completely evacuate the building. Fire trucks come. They, you know, let us know that we can go back in. We have to wait in the lobby for a few minutes while the elevators get going. And who is in the lobby but the entire Manzo family? I'm talking Chris, Albie, Lauren, Marky, Caroline, the full shebang. And I was like,
Al?
I didn't see him, but like there, you know, people were kind of moving about and there were a couple different people in the lobby and everyone was trying to social distance. And like, you know, I didn't really feel like I could go over in that moment. It was 4 a.m. Like everyone was in like PJs and kind of tired, but I was like, oh my God, that's like literally everybody. And it just goes to show that no matter where I go, Bravo will follow me.
Wow. Wait, also, was Lauren's husband Vito there?
I didn't see him. And it's funny you say that because Laura Rosenfeld, who sent me the Page Six article about them redoing the restaurant, asked me the same thing. But I didn't see him. But he could have been like anywhere at that moment. You know, like I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that wild?
That's crazy.
After that, we didn't really see them again. I think Danny saw Chris in the lobby at one point when he went inside. But the Manzos at the Berkeley Hotel, if anyone wants to go down to Asbury Park, New Jersey, that's probably where they will be hanging out for some time.
Go find them.
I also have a bunch of shout outs that I wanted to give on the podcast today because we've gotten a lot of messages lately. I know that you have, both have, but also a shout out for some people who helped with a gift for Danny for his birthday. And then I have an update on Dorinda's new tagline, which is something that you, me, and Kate all missed with the new tagline. So first, shout out to Instagram user Plantuition, who has messaged you and I both a couple of times.
Yes.
She sent a very, very sweet message right before BravoCon, just, you know, saying how much she enjoys our podcast. And she sent us a message recently too, just very thoughtful. And we love hearing those kind of messages, you know, because sometimes it's us sitting here talking to each other. And, you know, we don't always realize the impact that sometimes we have on people.
Or that if anyone's listening, you know, are we just speaking to each other, which is fine.
Which I enjoy. Yeah. So that's okay too. Second shout out is to the Sisters Stoned Creations for their amazing housewives themed candles. So they have these candles that have these designs on the outside and they're called like Hong Kong number 16. And it's Erica being like, you don't know what I do. And then they have a Dorinda one of her doing like, make it nice. So they hooked me up with some candles for Danny's birthday. So thank you guys. They have an Instagram called The Sisters Stoned and they have an Etsy shop too. Okay. And then shout out to listener Jody Constantino, who reached out to clarify Dorinda's new tagline. So let me just read the message because we totally missed this.
I'm not always right, but I never get it wrong. Or was that the original one?
That was the original one. This one was like a mint in
like
my mouth.
Okay.
Exactly. So she said, hilariously disappointed that three of you missed the Tinsley reference in Dorinda's tagline. Remember when Dorinda and Luann and maybe one other were talking about the night before and Tinsley looked like maybe they were sitting on a bench on the High Line and Dorinda said that Tinsley is like a mint in her mouth. She quickly disappears and is no longer a thought in Dorinda's mind.
Exactly.
So that's why she picked a mint, but she just thought Jody thought it was really funny that me, you, and Kate were sort of like, I don't get it. What's the mint reference? That doesn't make sense. But it was actually full shade to Tinsley for leaving.
I still can't get over how much Dorinda hates Tinsley. Secondly, kind of an obscure reference to have as a tagline, you know?
Right. Right. I don't think it left as much of an impact at the time, which is why it went right over me, you, and Kate's head, for that matter. Yeah. But Jodi Constantino, she picked up on it.
Well, should we get into today's episode?
Yes, please. What are we talking today?
Well, we need to talk about Below Deck Med. I know you're going to have a lot of thoughts, too.
Oh, yeah.
Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Brandy. Brandy's back. And Real Housewives of New York City. Berkshire's Part 2.
Woo! Plus, we have interviews with Alex Radcliffe from Below Deck Med and Bravo executive Selena Rochester. And we'll, of course, wrap up with Rose and Thorne.
So, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. First of all, I was dying at that, like, soap opera-esque way that they had Camille open the door. And then you see Kyle, like, slowly taking off her glasses. It was just... This show really is becoming a soap opera, like all the soap stars, and I don't know.
It was a great moment because I kind of forgot Camille was going to be in this episode. I knew we were getting a bunch of alums because I knew it was going to be Kyle's party, but I totally forgot we were going to be getting Camille and didn't expect her perhaps in the very first opening scene. And honestly, she looks so good. Like, she really has not changed much since her very first season. Like, I think she just is in really good shape, and she always is dressed super well. She had a very pillowy, like, flowy sleeve shirt that I thought you would really like.
Mm-hmm. It was nice.
It was beautiful. And, I mean, the whole scene between the two of them was just... so good.
I think it was gracious of Kyle to even sort of give Camille an opportunity to, on the show, apologize. Because I think if I were Kyle or any of the ladies, I'd be pretty done with Camille. And as we saw at the end of the episode, some of them really are. But the fact that Kyle was like, sure, I'll go to your house. I'll let you, like, beautifully... you know, tell the world how you were feeling, you know, because that's really what it is. Is it just for Kyle or is it for the fans too, who were like, what happened last season, Camille? You know?
I think so, because in some ways, and I know a lot of people out there, in some ways, Camille kind of saved last season in that she really kind of brought the drama to the next level when Puppygate had sort of turned into this whole thing and Lisa Vanderpump wasn't really around as much. Camille, as an OG, a little bit swept in and just caused more drama that at least had us being like, oh yes, this is why we watch Housewives, you know, like this is what we love. And what happened at the reunion was really intense. I mean, her storming off and her dress falling off was definitely one of my favorite moments from the reunion. But I'm surprised. I mean, it's crazy to think that they probably haven't spoken to each other since then. That seemed to be maybe the last time that they had seen Camille.
Well, I mean, as Kyle said, like, you're just liking all of these really hideous tweets about me. You know, that's not okay.
But following Camille on Twitter... is so enjoyable.
Well, but also Lisa Rinna had the best line where she was like,
Camille,
yeah,
you were an asshole on Twitter. I'm gonna say that to you, but it's nice to see you.
Okay.
I don't need beef with you, but you're an asshole on Twitter.
Yeah, immediately, right off the bat, Rinna was like, let's just get right to it. Let's clear it up. I mean, I appreciate that Rinna went right up to her and was like, let's just get right to it. We'll say it. We'll move on from it. But yeah, I mean, it's just... Twitter is where it can get really messy. And we've seen that on Real Housewives of New York City this season with things between Elise and Ramona. I think we talked about it last week. It can very quickly get messier there because they're also responding to things that are in people's interviews and stuff. So it's just a dangerous territory for housewives these days.
It's true.
The whole lunch with Denise and Lisa Rinna was... brilliant.
It was so uncomfortable at that beginning when it was sort of like, who's going to start this? Like, who's here to apologize to who, really? Right. And it kind of seemed like neither of them were, which fair. Like, I feel like what Denise was saying is, you didn't stand up for me, Lisa Rinna. And Lisa Rinna's like, why would I stand up for you? Like, you're just being so wishy-washy about, like, what we can talk about. And it's not okay.
Yeah, I think it's tough because it seems like Denise doesn't want to play the housewives game. And I think that's what she was saying without actually saying it to Rinna. And if you look at Denise's eyes in this scene, it seems like she's trying to talk to Rinna through her eyes. Like, she's trying to, like, telepathically communicate with her of, like, I don't want to do this, like this back and forth, not like artificial drama, but just leaning into the whole thing, because she knows Rinna and they've known each other for so long that I think she has different expectations for Lisa than she does for the other women. And that's where Denise is coming from with the whole, like, I don't understand why you don't have my back and why you're saying these things in front of not just the other women, but in front of the cameras.
Okay, well, so then do you think the subtext of what she's saying is, I don't want my kids involved, or it's just, I don't want the heat on me anymore? Like, I'm now at the center of the drama and I don't like it, so stop.
Right. Well, so I think what Kyle has said, and she said it on Watch What Happens Live, is that she thinks Denise is playing like an old housewives trick and turning the situation about the threesomes and her kids into something to, you know, cover up something else. But I think with Denise being as famous as she is, and with everything that she's been through with Charlie Sheen and just her life being so public, I do think in a lot of ways she thinks two steps ahead when it comes to what's going to hit the press and how information, once it hits the press, how it's going to grow and how that might impact her and her family. And that's not something that necessarily all of them have to deal with. Obviously, they're all public figures. They all deal with paparazzi. They all deal with radar online and all sorts of different things that have come up on the show, because that is the nature of the beast. But I think Denise just sees things a little bit differently, because as soon as these women start harping on one particular thing, and for her, it is the kids, it's the threesome conversations, it's the you're calling us bad moms, Denise is afraid at how that's going to grow. But little do we know, or little did she know at the time, that the real story is going to be this whole situation with Brandy.
Right.
Assuming, you know, it plays out the way that we all suspect it might on the show, it could be very different from what we've already heard in the media.
I've watched ahead. It's not.
Oh, damn. I mean, good. I mean, yes. I mean, I can't wait. What else I loved about the lunch conversation was actually what Lisa Rinna said during her interview, where she broke the fourth wall, which we very rarely see in the interview setting, because that's where they're right in front of a producer, and that's when they usually try to keep it all very like specific to what happened on the show. But Lisa's like, I think Denise is using the show to fix her image from last season.
I think Denise may be using the show to change her image from last season. But guess what? This show is about us being honest and showing our feelings. Good, bad, ugly, all of it. You can't control it.
But I don't know if I believe that. Do you see that?
I honestly don't understand. I don't. That doesn't check out to me.
Right.
Her being worried about her kids doesn't check out to me. Like, I don't really understand what the issue is for Denise. I know what it is for the other ladies. That's very clear to me, and I totally get it. Don't try to make us look like bad moms just because you're, like, now suddenly this person who doesn't want to talk about sex. But why does she care? It's very strange.
I don't know. It does feel a little bit stuck. Like, we're not being able to move on from this situation. And I think Aaron, the way he reacted last episode, shut off the ladies. It happened at Kyle's party too. He just kind of shut it down before everyone was able to express themselves and really work through it. It seems like Denise just wants to be like, okay, we've moved on. But everyone else is like, well, no, I think we should talk about this matter at hand. And it's just different, I think, with her and Rinna, because they are friends, and there's probably stuff that Rinna knows that the other women never will. And Denise just feels like, I think you should be loyal to me before you're loyal to not just these women, but loyal to the show.
Well, and I think in general, it's a theme that we always see across franchises, which is the subtext being, you brought me onto the show. How do you not have my back?
Like, right.
I came in through you, Lisa Rinna. We're the ones with the connection. How could you let me walk onto the show and then you're going to stab me in the back and make me look bad?
Right. And you're not going to protect me. I mean, the whole argument too about Rinna being like, Denise needs to protect her image. I feel like last season, Denise was really well received.
Yes. Everyone loved that.
Yeah. I mean, and it's still like Denise still shows up to filming in jeans. She still feels like a little bit more relatable and attainable compared to some of these other women. But I'm not sure what Denise is trying to protect. I'm not totally sure what Rinna is upset about. It feels a little murky to me, but maybe there's more to come out that we just don't know.
This is kind of just occurring to me, because I don't know if you remember, but in the after show last season and at the reunion, Denise said Aaron was not happy about the big penis comment. He wasn't happy about how out there she was being. And we see this season, the you know, I'm gonna crush your hand, you know, whatever. maybe he's the uptight one and she's trying to change her image for him. Like, maybe he's the one who's like, you got to cut it out. Like, I don't want you talking about threes. I don't, you know, this or that. Like, I have a business. Who knows? But like, maybe he's the conservative one.
That's true. And maybe it's less uptight and more controlling. Like, the way he speaks to her, the way he speaks to her friends, there is something there. Because listen, Denise is not new to being famous. She's not even new to reality television. She had her own reality TV show well before Aaron. So maybe he wants more of his life and their life together to be private. But I'm sorry, that's not what you signed up for. That's not what this is. You got to start talking and sharing a little bit more. What did you think about Eileen Davidson's Jennifer Aniston hair?
No? I like Eileen as a blonde and a blonde. But you know me, I hate change. Right, so right. Every time you get a dramatic haircut, I lose my goddamn mind. So like, I need Eileen to stay blonde. I just think that's what I need.
Yeah. I mean, I loved that it was more of the Jennifer Aniston, like dirty blonde, kind of like little bob. I appreciate it. But I do think she looks great as like a really rich blonde.
Yes.
It's more soap star. It's more of like the vibe that she just gives off. Like, she should
Malibu,
be a blonde.
Malibu glam. Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I do like it. It definitely reminded me of like Friends and just brought me to a place that made me feel comfortable. But I do understand what you mean.
But obviously, she's beautiful no matter what. I want to talk about the way in which the rest of the ladies reacted to Camille at Kyle's benefit party. Because like, they, I mean, Dorit was a star to me in the way that she saw Camille. Kept going and then went right up to Camille's assistant and was like, hi, Kimber, how are you?
Oh my God, that was good.
Hi, Kimber, how are you?
Hi, sweetheart.
You look beautiful.
Thank you.
Oh my God, this dress is stunning.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh my God.
I know. Let's get a drink, my love.
Okay. Okay.
Where's Kyle?
Probably outside, honey.
Oh, well, there's Mo.
We got the cold shoulder from Dorit.
Did we ever? Wow.
Like, she made it very clear to Camille in that moment, don't even try it. Don't come up to me like you're going to do to Teddy or to Denise. I do not want to associate with you.
Right. Well, and poor Teddy then, the way Teddy was like stuck with Camille, like, what do I do?
I was really proud of her, though. I think it's so easy in those situations to just be like, okay, I accept it. Let's move on. And she's just like, no, you went too far. You were so nasty on social media. I don't want to be friends with you. And I'm not going to pretend to just because there's a camera here.
Right. Well, and I appreciate it too, because earlier on this season, we saw that dinner at Kyle's where Sutton was like, I think you're kind of boring. And Teddy, pregnancy emotions take over. She starts crying. And not that that's a sign of weakness at all, but you know, that kind of reaction versus how we see her react to being in front of Camille. I was like, okay, she's on like the up of the pregnancy emotion right now. And she's feeling tough and she's feeling strong. And she's feeling like, I don't have time for this woman's bullshit. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't.
She's moved past the hurt phase and she's now just like, fuck you.
Right, right. Not only do we get Camille too, we get so many alums in this episode. I mean, you know, I love me some Kim, but we get Adrian.
And Brandy, which is obviously what all of us fans have been waiting for all freaking season.
It's funny that she came in and immediately was like, I'm kind of nervous. Like, I want to know exactly what she was nervous about or who she was nervous to see.
It's always such a theme with Brandy, though. You know, I rewatch Beverly Hills all the time. Every beginning of a season, she would go into an event being like, I'm really nervous. And before reunions, she would be so nervous. And it's like, I think she knows the damage she does a little bit and that she has to pay for it.
Right.
Or in this case, is it because she knew she was going to see Denise?
That's kind of what it felt like. And I think through the editing and the way that they set that scene up, it seemed like it was about Denise. But I can imagine she might be nervous to run into a lot of people who might be at Kyle's house.
It seems like we're going to get more into the Denise stuff next episode.
Finally. It's upon us. I also cannot help but notice how much less the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills drink compared to, we'll say, other franchises, but I think we all know which one I'm talking about.
Well, this week in particular, which is why I'm so excited to get into Real Housewives of New York, because dear God.
Because the thing about Los Angeles is, yeah, it is more of a commuter city in that you are driving. You have to drive everywhere in LA. Everybody knows that. But with these filming things, oftentimes these women are taking cars. So it is just as easy for them to turn up if they really want to.
And I wonder if it's also that they have younger kids than they do on New York.
That's true. They don't have to worry about, you know, or they do have to worry about going home to their children.
Because I've also started rewatching New York from the beginning. They didn't used to drink like that. And I wonder if it is a product of like, I'm sure my mom drinks more now, you know, like you just, it's a different phase of your life. Kids are gone. Who do you have to answer to?
Yeah, my mom definitely is drinking more than I remember in my days of living with my mother. But that's what she, I mean, you know what? She's getting close to retirement. She's like, I don't care. I'm going down to the beach. I'm having a good time. That's a good point. That is a good point. They don't have as many kids to worry about in New York. I spoke with Selena Rochester, who is the director of current production for Bravo, about her time working on shows like Real Housewives of Atlanta, Real Housewives of New York City, and Married to Medicine LA. Plus, she shares some behind-the-scenes tidbits from reunions and filming experiences where talent was, we'll say, a little bit difficult. Here's that interview. All right, guys, we are here with Selena Rochester, who is the director of current production and development for both Bravo and E! Hi, Selena.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
So tell everyone exactly what your role is here at Bravo and give a little bit of about what the day-to-day looks like for you.
So basically, I'm like a network executive, which means I oversee a bunch of shows for production for Bravo. And then for E, I develop shows. And then in terms of like my production role, I'm involved in everything from pre-production all the way to post-production. During production, it's a lot of calls with our production company. So at Bravo, we have what's called third-party production companies, and they're the ones who are like in the field shooting the show, and then we have weekly calls with them where we talk about, you know, what's going on in the women's lives and, you know, what's of interest, what's not of interest, and sort of shape what the season will look like. And then once post-production starts, the same production company will send us like rough cuts of an episode, and then that's where we have to give ton of notes, like, you know, 5 pages worth of notes on the show, and then eventually it comes on air.
So I know you have been at Bravo for a long time. You've worked on a ton of shows since you've been here. Can you name a few for our listeners?
Mm-hmm. My very first show as a production exec was Fashion Queens season 2 with Bevy and Derek J and Lawrence. And that was, I like to call it production boot camp because it was a live to tape show and was every week. So like we had to shoot it, edit it within 2 days, and then it would be on air. And it was insane. Like I would have to, because the show aired Friday night. So I would have to wake up like Saturday morning at 6 a.m. to watch the rough cut, to give notes. And then Sunday again, I think at like 9 a.m. to watch the final version, just to make sure it's okay. So it would air that night. So basically for the entire season, I had no social life, or if I had a social life, people knew that I had to be up in like 3 hours to watch a show. So it was insane. I did Blood, Sweat, and Heels as well. New York City Housewives, Atlanta Housewives. I've been on Million Dollar Listing New York since season 4, I think, Luisa's first season. Inside the Actors Studio, which was always a fan favorite of mine.
Yeah.
And was great. And James Lipton was an amazing, amazing host. Like, all the wonderful things that people say about James is really true. Like, he was just so smart and dedicated. And, you know, he would send the most, the longest, like, emails. But, like, they were just so well written and, you know, just full of just beautiful language. And it's like, all you're doing is, like, pitching Beyonce to do Inside the Actors Studio. But it's like this beautiful like manuscript, but yeah.
Right. Well, everything related to Beyonce is beautiful, so it makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
So how did you get into this field? Because I know that's something that a lot of people who want to get involved in production are really interested in. And I know I did a little stalking on your LinkedIn prior, and I know that you were kind of going in a different direction at first, and then you got involved in production. So can you talk through that?
So for undergrad, I was a political science major. I wanted to go to law school. I was like, that's what I want to do. But then I'm going to say like junior year, I was like, I don't really know if I want to do law. Like, I'm not that passionate about it, but I am really passionate about film and TV. But at the time, you know, like the idea of working in film and television just seemed so abstract. So I decided to get a master's in film and TV production because I got my master's. And then right after I graduated from my master's program, I started the NBC Page program, which became famous on 30 Rock.
Right.
And I did it in 30 Rock. So I moved to New York. I was an NBC Page, basically gave tours all around 30 Rock. I know like the most random facts about the Today Show, the Tonight Show, and actually the Today Show also, and would give tours on those studios. And then an assistant position opened up at Bravo. So I applied and I got it, luckily. And so I was, you know, working for the head of the department and another, like, we used to call him the Housewives Guru because he oversaw most of the Housewives at that time. Yeah, from there, I just kept getting promoted and, you know, I pretty much stayed at the network. And then about a year ago, I decided to add development to, I guess, like what I was doing. Because, you know, you typically most networks will keep production and development completely separate. Like the development execs will develop a show, pass it over to production, and then we take it from there. But I wanted to do development also. And so now I do development and production.
Right, right. I mean, that's so cool to have such a well-rounded perspective then, if you're really seeing something from the idea stage all the way through filming and then post. I mean, that's incredible. You have such a wide array of experiences already.
Yeah, no, it's been interesting because they're two completely different sort of like ways to attack the same thing. Like, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be a TV show, but like the way in which you develop it is completely different from the way you produce it. And it's been great like learning both of those so that, you know, one day I can run my own network. I don't know.
Right. Hey, dream big. That's what we do, right? So working on Housewives, I would imagine some of the craziest experiences that you've had have probably been at reunions. So can you talk a little bit about maybe one of the most shocking moments from a reunion you attended?
Yeah, reunions are always a wild time. You never know what you're going to get. Like, because usually it's about 3 to 4 months after taping has wrapped. And of course, they've seen the entire season. So everyone comes in like riled up and ready to go, but also like wanting to just, you know, fix whatever that, you know, that might have happened within the season, like have clarity on it. I think for me, the wildest moment would probably be from Atlanta Housewives. And those were by far, I'd say, the most fun reunions because the ladies are so much fun and it's just like a great environment and like all the glam that's always around. It got pretty serious the year that Portia and Kenya got into that physical fight. And it was, you know, it was difficult because for us, like, you know, we're watching and the way it works is like, you know, of course the ladies are on stage and with Andy and then the producers are in what we call video village. And so we're, you know, just watching everything. And you see, like, you know, obviously Portia and Kenya having tense moments, getting into it, but no one ever really expects violence or fighting just because that's like contrary to what people think about reality TV. We really do have a mandate that, you know, fighting and violence isn't tolerated because it's sort of like, it can bring down the tenor of what you're trying to do. So it was a split second. I mean, like, and it was really, you know, it was difficult. We were all just very shocked. We didn't know what was going on. But I think for me, the hardest part, and I think also there was a redeeming moment for Portia, like we showed it on the show where after that moment happened, Kenya got up and walked away and Portia was laying on the ground, just like hands over her face, crying and like just screaming, "I'm so embarrassed. I can't believe I did that. I can't believe I did that." And everybody was like, it was Phaedra, I remember, and Nene in particular, the executive producer and of course cameraman, and all of us too. But we were sort of like on the outside because we can't be on camera, just like watching and like trying to get her like, "It's okay. You can get up." But like she really, really was humiliated and really in that moment felt like she had done something wrong and just couldn't get off the floor. And it was like 20 minutes before anyone could actually get her off the floor. And it was just really hard. You know, I felt bad for her because I knew that for her, she knew that this would be on TV and like people would judge her for having that one moment. So it was unfortunate. And then on the flip side, Kenya, of course, I felt terrible for Kenya because, you know, this had happened to her. But what I really, really admired about Kenya is that after all of that, you know, craziness, there would have been a lot of women who would have been like, "I'm done, I'm leaving," and would have left. But she, you know, fixed her makeup, fixed her hair, came back on stage, was professional, and just like continued the conversation and was ready to go. And I was like, wow, that's a stand-up person. I mean, I think they were both equally, you know, embarrassed, but they were equally professional in the end.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's one thing you have to give Kenya is no matter what you think about her, she is a pro. And I think we've seen that over the years in a lot of ways, even just as Bravo employees. And I think viewers have seen that too. But that must have been a crazy moment to witness. And there must be also the producer side of you that is like, oh my God, this is going to make great television. Like, as much as it was a very delicate moment and, you know, the emotions were so high, you must have been like, wow, I can't believe this is going to be on air.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is. I think, you know, as a producer, like in our mind, the reason why we watch a reunion taping is about 12 to 14 hours, like a day. And we have maybe an hour break for lunch. And then you have, you know, like breaks in between for hair and makeup and to use restroom. So it's like a long day. But like when you see, like we're trained to sort of look for those big moments that, you know, will be talked about a lot or, you know, could just really engage conversation. That's the point. We want our shows to engage conversation amongst viewers, whether it's good or bad. And that was definitely going to be a water cooler moment.
Right. No, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's still talked about today. It comes up on our show once in a while, you know, when we're talking about Atlanta and the evolution of their relationships, especially Portia and Kenya, now that they're both moms, and just to think how far that they've come since that moment is really remarkable. And I think that's why we love our shows, is to see that kind of growth in people right. over time. Now, on the flip side of reunions, when you are getting ready to launch a new show like Married to Medicine Los Angeles, for example, or Southern Charm New Orleans, what is that process like? What are you looking for when you're getting ready to launch a new show?
So for Married to Medicine LA, it was really interesting because, you know, it was a first season show, but it was a spinoff. And so, like, you know, it had the benefit of viewers already knowing what they're getting because they know what Married to Medicine Atlanta is. Married to Medicine LA will be the same, but with different women. But there's also a lot of pressure for us to ensure that we were, like, the viewers would have the same benefits that they get from Atlanta for LA, but also not be too derivative of it, because LA has to have its own flavor and style. So we try to definitely in the first season not only like showcase these women and, you know, find really interesting, captivating women, but like figure out what is the style of LA? Like, how does an LA show shoot? And what does Black LA look like? At the time, Insecure was actually really big. And so creatively, we try to use that scripted show as a way to sort of make decisions about the music, about the graphics, about the way we would shoot the show. Like, you know, we have to take into consideration the aesthetic of a show. And because it was based in LA, we wanted like it to have a very strong LA vibe. We wanted to ensure that like the B-roll felt and looked like LA. Like they have a lot of murals around. This was right after Nipsey Hussle's death. And so we wanted to like incorporate murals of Nipsey Hussle or like the long palm trees or like the sprawling mountains and then the beaches, just so that when people are watching Married to Medicine LA, they're getting what they're used to, but they're also getting something new and different. So those are a lot of like sort of the things that we look at when we're trying to launch a show. And then of course, promotion, and you have to get a ton of press and you want people to be interested. But that could be difficult because it's a new season and, you know, people don't know these women yet.
Right. And so with something like Married to Medicine LA, too, the kind of crossover moments that you guys have in often the premiere or the finale or something like that, where some of the cast members come in, I think that's always really interesting to see how, you know, you're bringing in an audience from a different show into something that's a sort of break off of the same franchise. So what are those relationships like when you are trying to make those connections between the LA and Atlanta ladies? I mean, I know we have like Dr. Contessa and Britton. They went to college together. So there's sort of that natural connection. But what is it like when you're blending casts on a show like that?
The only time we will do a crossover like that is if there are those authentic relationships. But when we were getting ready to shoot Married to Medicine LA, Contessa, I think, just mentioned to a producer that, to one of the Atlanta producers, that she was going out to LA for Britton. And we were like, oh, well, that's like a perfect, real, authentic way to sort of have the viewers be introduced to the LA ladies, because, you know, they'd be introduced with like people that they really love and like. And we found oftentimes that when a beloved talent or cast member endorses like another show, like it happened with Lisa Vanderpump and Vanderpump Rules, like the reason why that crossover, that was a very natural crossover, obviously, it's her restaurant. It kind of helps the audience sort of like understand who they are. And I think it helped a lot with Married to Medicine LA and Atlanta. And it was just a natural transition.
Yeah. How do you know someone is perfect for unscripted television? Like, what is it that you look for before they get on the show? What is that?
Definitely for Bravo in particular, we love sort of loud and just really over the top people in a way that is fun and funny. So you definitely want people who have humor. You know, our shows, I think, are best when they're funny and they're, you know, the women can have fun poking at themselves, poking at each other, but not in a mean-spirited way, which of course that does happen. So the humor is like the main thing. We need someone to be humorous. We also want someone who's not afraid to open up their lives or their life to cameras, because for 3 to 4 months out of the year, you're really supposed to like share everything that's going on in your life with your producer so that we can have the most authentic story possible. I think a lot of times people think about reality and they think it's scripted or people are playing characters, but like we look for real authentic people. So like everyone you see on our network, that's exactly who they are in real life. You just need someone who's unabashed.
Yeah, but almost unabashed in like a subtle way, like a very natural way.
Exactly.
That's
so
interesting. Now, have you ever had, well, I'm sure you've had angry phone calls from talent, but like when you get those calls, what is it that they're most often upset about? Does it come out in, you know, post-production or when shows are already airing and maybe the way that they've been shown on camera, or what is it that they usually are driven the most crazy over?
It's usually the post process, like when the show, well, really past post, when the show is airing and they see something that they don't like and they just want to vent, you know, and they, it's weird because like, you know, you, and we've seen it a ton on reunions, editing, you know, had, you know, I was only shown that way because of the editing. So that's often like a big gripe. And then you sort of just have to talk them through the process. And it's like, no, of course not. Because we're really not in the business of making anybody look bad, because and like viewers would reject them and, you know, you won't have that. But, you know, it just comes with the territory. Like, I'd rather the angry phone call or email than like I've been like at a person's home and they've gotten really upset in the moment, you know, and it's like there's this one cast member. They were having a conversation with another cast member and I happened to be there because like oftentimes, you know, we'll attend some of these conversations. And I guess the line of questioning from the other cast member made the one woman get really sort of upset and was like, why are you asking these questions? So you have to like sit down in her living room as to why the other cast member was asking her those questions. It's like, this is a part of your life. She was upset and you just have to keep your calm and, you know, let them know that no one is trying to do any harm.
So basically being a producer is like part therapist.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot of that, which is one of the reasons why, like when my career first started, I was like, I do not want to be in the field is what we call it, like the production companies, because you have to be much more hands-on with talent. And it is, yeah, it's like therapy, like part therapist, part friend, but also like, you know, you're a producer. And at the end of the day, it's like, we're trying to get the best sort of, you know, story possible.
With Married to Medicine LA, one thing that I found interesting is a big part of Jasmine's story this season is that her husband isn't around. So when you guys are filming and putting the show together, what are some of the challenges when, you know, a spouse or someone important in their life doesn't want to be involved in the process?
It can be really, really challenging because, you know, like I said, we want to tell the most authentic stories possible. And you can't tell a story about a woman who is married if you don't ever see your husband. And I think that was a big challenge with Jasmine. You know, it happens often. Oftentimes the spouse who didn't agree or have that desire to be on the show can sort of be trepidatious. And like a lot of times they really just need like one season to see and then they'll agree. It's hard because, you know, for instance, with Jasmine, I remember, and this ended up becoming like a big thing throughout the season. And it wasn't intentional. It was because all of the women in the same way were wondering, well, where's her husband? Why isn't he around? And so when they went to her house for the Barbie party, then all of these wild conspiracy theories about him, that's what happens. But it can be very difficult. Husbands are on board. Kids are on board. If they're, you know, oftentimes they're divorced couples and there might be a child from a previous marriage that the parent who isn't, you know, involved in the show doesn't want their child on camera. And so, you know, that's fine. Like what we usually do is like, we'll talk about it. Like, you know, we'll have like the cast member, of course, because it's a part of their life, talk about it, but you just can't see that person, but it's just much harder when it's a husband and it's like,
right,
you know, like he has to show up at some point.
I really thought that we were gonna maybe get a glimpse at him in the finale episode because Kendra was like trying to sneak up the stairs, like that security guard was like no, but I was like, oh my god, maybe he'll come down, like maybe this will be the big moment at the end of season two. But I guess we just have to stalk him on Jasmine's Instagram. That's the only option.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we were all the same. I remember I was there at that party and I was thinking the same thing. It's like, is he going to show up? Is he? I don't know. Because she said maybe, you know, and we just follow the action.
Right.
Yeah, he's on her Insta. So yeah. He's a real person. That at least we know.
He's cute, too. I mean, he's cute. Yeah,
very successful.
So being on Bravo for so long, if you could bring back a cast member to any show, who would it be and why?
That's a lot because there are a lot of people. The one cast member that I always, and I think luckily she's started making a few appearances in the past couple of years, but Jill Zarin from New York Housewives.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just because, you know, she was a part of the original cast. And, you know, then I was actually on the season. I started on the show the first season where we did the full, like, cast revamp and, like, Jill went away. But she was still, like, she's someone who, one, was still connected to all of the women. She was very much their friends. Like, she would show up at parties, which is why you would see her sort of in the background. And usually, you know, I don't know. She's just someone who I think could have come back and would have fit nicely, and maybe down the line, next season, you never
know. She made an appearance this season at Halloween, and she was sort of like, oh, let me just check in and see what's going on with you ladies.
Right. Yeah, with a new boyfriend, like that's always right. Good. Like whenever we do bring someone back, it's always like, so what has evolved in their life and like what will be new and different, but also the same, you know, from before. And I think she has like a lot of things going on would be interesting.
Right. Well, when someone does leave a show and come back, what is that process like, or that experience? Because we've seen that, you know, with Kenya, with Sheree, with Nene even. So, you know, what is it that you have to do to get them back to the show?
It really varies. Like in all those situations, they're all very different. And I think it starts with the reason why they left. And that is all very different too. And a lot of times it is really the women just wanting and needing to take a break. Like, you know, we all, I think when Nene first left, I think even viewers could see that she was just like, her head wasn't in it at that time. She had the Ryan Murphy shows and like her clothing line was just taking off and she had done Broadway. And it's like, she had so much, her star really was rising that it's like, you know, you have to be fully dedicated. But, she took a break and then she decided to come back. And I think with most housewives who leave, like there's always that door. It's like, sure, like we're willing and open. And it's really all about figuring out what's going on in your life right now, who you're friends with in the cast. That's a big, big one, because you can't just come back and expect like everyone to pick up, you know, where you left off. Like you really have to be genuinely connected and friends with the people in the cast so that we can continue a show about women who are friends.
Right. Well, particularly with like Atlanta, you know, I mean, that's been huge with the various casting over the last couple of years. Were you on the show when Candy met Todd?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You were. Okay. Yeah. So what was that like behind the scenes?
It was interesting. So I didn't know, like I didn't know Todd prior to the relationship, but because he was a line producer on the show, and which meant like he worked for the production company, and I usually just don't interface with the line producers. But it was really interesting because the year that they met was the season that they went to South Africa, and the cast went to South Africa, and there was this moment where they all went to see a fortune teller who was reading like tea leaves, I believe. In that moment, he looks up at Candy and he's like, your husband is here with you. And she's like, what? And he's like, he's here. Little did anyone know, he was like back, you know, right, probably standing around with a clipboard, you know,
right.
Doing his job. And you know, the one thing I will say, like obviously, like that's just like tricky territory when talent and a producer engage in a relationship. But Candy has always been like a stellar businesswoman and like on the up and up and very professional. And immediately, you know, she let people know of the relationship. And it's like, we can't stop people from falling in love. And the fact that it got to the point where it's like, now they're ready to actually get married. Like we wanted to obviously do the wedding special, which, you know, I was a part of producing as well. But like, there was a point where Todd sort of had to be talked into being on camera, because when you're a producer, like, your job and your role is to be as far away from cameras as possible. And right. oftentimes producers don't want to be on camera. Like, I have zero desire to ever be on camera. It just makes me uncomfortable. That was a process because you are now about to marry an Atlanta housewife and one of the most famous like housewives. Like, you're going to have to be on camera. So it was interesting for him. Like, you know, I think in that first year or so, and I remember being at the wedding when, like, you know, we all producers were in our video village, and there were some of the producers who had worked with him for years, and they were like crying and crying. And it's like so weird to see the producers like so emotional at a wedding, but it's like, because like they're producing this wedding, but they're also like producing one of their best friends.
Right.
So it was really nice. And I think that was like one of the best sort of like scenarios in which a talent and a producer can get together.
Yeah. And we haven't heard the end of it, you know, from Mama Joyce through like many seasons at this point. So that's really funny. Yeah. I remember hearing about the tea leaves thing not too long ago and being like, oh my God, that's right. He was like in the room or there at least on the trip. That's so crazy. This season of Real Housewives of New York City has brought new housewife Leah McSweeney. So she has made quite a splash this season. And what are your thoughts on Leah?
I love Leah. Like, yeah. Absolutely love Leah. She's like perfect. She fits right in with all of the women. Like, you know, that's often the hardest part is like, will like the chemistry be there? Will oftentimes with new cast members, they're kind of like overwhelmed by it all because like these are big, larger than life personalities. People have been on TV for years. And like, there's like usually an intimidation factor, but Leah, like, is not intimidated, did not care. Like, she's completely and authentically herself. And that's like the number one thing you want with someone on camera who's willing to show you the good, the bad, the ugly. And what really sold me for her was like her first night of getting like super wasted and just like going crazy. And it's like, yeah. Okay, well, that's amazing because it makes good TV. But the next day, she was just like, oh, yeah, whatever. That's just me.
And I'm this like, is me. Yeah.
Like, that's what you need. Because usually there's people like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that on camera. Oh my God, the world is going to see me act like a fool.
Right.
But, like, she embraced it.
So, yeah, like Lisa Rinna says, own it.
Exactly. And those are always like the best like cast members, like people who can own who they are. They're going to go far.
Now, what did you think about Tinsley leaving mid-season?
It wasn't a surprise for me at all. And when she met Scott, you know, that was kind of, I think everyone knew that if she got that ring, she's deuces right. from the New York City Housewives. And yeah. Yeah, she got a ring and I'm really happy for her. Like, I really hope like they can unfreeze the egg and like have her, she can have her babies and she can live that housewife fantasy that she's always wanted.
Yeah, I mean, I miss her. I do miss Tinsley because I really did love her. But it was, you know, these ladies are going to carry the season just fine, I think, without her because they are pros.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
A lot of Bravo shows, particularly this year, are starting to break the fourth wall. So from a production perspective, what is that like for you guys?
I, for one, am glad that that's happening. I think for me, like, I'm on the younger side, like being a younger executive. So it's like, I remember the before where, you know, we just couldn't talk about it at all. But I think shows like The Kardashians were like, that was sort of the first show that gave other networks confidence that you can break the fourth wall, because The Kardashians had gotten so big that it's like, there's just certain things in their life that you can't really address without addressing the fact that they're on a reality show. And I think that show did it really well, where you didn't take viewers too far out of the TV show in a way, because that's sort of like the line that we're always ensuring that we don't cross, like when you're breaking the fourth wall, because people come to the show for escapism. You know, they want to just chill, relax, not think about it. I'm watching TV. But if you just sort of like break that and it's like, well, this is actually a reality, like start showing cameras and like the nuts and bolts of it all, that can take them out of it.
Right.
But at the same time, a lot of our shows also have gotten so big that there's just drama that like is obvious because like you're on a show and like, you know, things in the blogs. Like, I think it started with the blogs, like Atlanta right. in particular, Married to Medicine also with Dr. Jackie and her husband cheating, like all like stuff like that happened on the blogs, like the headlines on the blogs, which we will often put up in our show because it just like, it's a way to tell the story. We'll say, you know, Married to Medicine star has, you know, husband caught cheating. So it's like, you kind of have to break it in that way. And then there are also the moments that I love or that I don't shy away from is when the cast members are talking to producers. Cause like you said earlier, producers in a way are like a therapist. And so when there's a really intense moment, you know, that they're going through, a lot of times they will just break off and just have to go talk to their producer and just like have that in the moment sort of like emotional sort of like dump.
Word vomit.
Yeah, exactly. And like in the past, we wouldn't show any of that. Sometimes we would like subtitle it, but now we've embraced like that conversation because it's real and it's like it has to happen. And they oftentimes you get the best moments. My favorite breaking the fourth wall moment was from Married to Medicine, the reunion where Simone and Cecil were going through a divorce. And so all of like no one knew what was happening. We came in the day of the reunion and Simone, you know, pretty much told producers, yeah, like we're getting a divorce and I want to tell the women on the reunion set. And we're like, oh, okay, sure. Like, you know, it's going to be a great, very real, authentic, visceral moment for the rest of the ladies. And it was. But what we didn't expect was when, after she had broke it to the ladies that they were getting a divorce, you know, cameras went down so that we can do our, I think it was lunch break. And so all the women are, you know, piling backstage into their dressing rooms. But like, everyone was just so shocked and like they were just, no, Simone, you can't do this. Like all the moments that, you know, you guys see, like I remember someone must have been like, there are real conversations happening right now. Get a cameraman. And like a cameraman gets up, gets his camera, like dashes down. We didn't even have like the audio. I think we were just using like the boom mics at that time, but it was just real authentic moments. And so like, you know, it's backstage, like it's messy and dirty. And usually like as producers, we like everything to look nice and pretty, but like we had to show it and we had to like have those real authentic conversations and then like come back on set. And then Andy had to address it while we were on lunch break. You know, women had these conversations and then it led to Simone and Cecil saying, okay, we'll work on our marriage. And then 3 years later, they're still married and like, so happy. And so like, that was definitely like one of my best moments, like a TV show saved a marriage.
Yeah, no, for real. I mean, I think it's so cool too, because I think it's particularly interesting for the super fans of our shows. And I remember, you know, before I worked on Bravo, I worked on Oxygen before the rebrand and the big show was Bad Girls Club. Yeah. And fans loved when the producers got involved because it kind of brought everyone down to reality, you know, being like, oh my God, this is a show. And like when they stepped in, you knew it was serious or you knew that there was something that was happening that was going to be really important. And, you know, I just think those moments are so cool. And it's happening, you know, Beverly Hills this season. It's going to be happening on Roni next week. We saw a preview of Ramona being like, get me a producer. And I was just like, oh my God, I can't wait for that.
Right, exactly. Because that's usually when they're the most like unfiltered because they're just angry or emotional and they're really not thinking about the cameras. And it's important because you want those moments.
Now, final question. We know obviously the pandemic has changed so many things about our world, but what has it been like in terms of production trying to get these shows completed when you have this massive pandemic going on?
It's been really interesting. And I will say it's been like an exciting time for me. And I think the production world, like a very scary time because, you know, we don't know what's going to happen like long term and like how it's going to affect the shows that come on air. And but what I loved is how we all sort of like really just moved quickly and had to figure it out because it's like, yes, like quarantine, pandemic, but the show literally must go on.
Right.
We just had to figure it out, like with Married to Medicine LA. So we had finished production, but we were in the process of still getting like, you know, those interviews, like the kind of where I feel like I'm in an interview. Yeah, confessionals, right? Yeah, we call them the interviews, the confessionals. So, you know, some of those confessionals are shot after the season. And that's because, you know, you have to ask questions about the finale event or what have you. And we had to figure out, like, how do we shoot with everyone quarantined? Like, you can't, like, producers can't come to your house. The women can't leave. You can't have glam. It was just crazy. And so each show sort of came up with their own, like, way of attacking it. With Married to Medicine LA, I thought we came up with a really interesting plan. So we put together a production kit. And when I say we, I should say the production company, like they did a great job doing all of that. But they would put together a production kit, which was like an iPhone, I think they were using, like a lighting kit and a sound kit. Actually, messenger it to the women's house, drop it off on their doorstep and leave. The women would then have to open up their door, bring all the production equipment inside, and then get on the phone with production and talk through how to set up lighting gear. Now, I'm talking about housewives like Lisa Rinna, like, right. you know, the Married to Medicine ladies. So it's like, we were all just like, how's this going to go? But like, in the end, it was really good. And like, you know, they were able to set up the lighting, set up the sound, sort of set up the, I think we had like cameras, well, iPhones on tripods. And then, you know, like typically there's an actual producer in the room asking questions. And so this was a little difficult because there was no producer in the room. And with Married to Medicine LA, I think we had a producer like FaceTiming them. And so they could at least see and have that interaction. Because some of the times, you know, we were asking questions that could be quite emotional because it's questions like having to do the things that we see on air. And it was interesting. Jasmine, for instance, has like curly blonde hair. So like, the lighting against her backdrop like created this halo effect, and we're like, no, we can't have the halo effect. And so we had to rearrange lighting. And then like there were certain women who like their eye line wasn't straight, like they'd be looking up like, la, 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 or they'd right. be like, la, la, and it's like, no, that's gonna be distracting for viewers. Like there was a margin of error. Like luckily everyone in the industry was going through this, so we knew that like if we weren't perfect, like there it'd be okay, but we wanted to be as close to perfect as possible. Like most producers are like type A personalities, like, you know, right. especially creatives, like, no, it has to look beautiful. Like Imani, you know, Imani has a bald head. And so like the lighting had a lot of highlight on her head. So like the top of her head was really shiny. And we're like, oh, we can't do that. So we have to figure that out. The glam of it all was a challenge at one point. I think usually like on Married to Medicine LA, we have the doctors wear their white lab coats in the confessionals, just, you know, to distinguish the doctors from the wives. It's just an aesthetic choice. But like we had gotten in a confessional, and the entire time Britain didn't have a white lab coat on, and that's probably because there's no producer there to remind her. And it was really like her outfit was great. Like I love Britain, she's so style, you know, she has such great style. And that was really interesting too, to see like the different iterations of like self-glam. A lot of the women did really well, you know. I think they were able to get it together on their own. But it was interesting. And moving forward, you know, we're still very much in the midst of COVID. Luckily, there are states that are starting to allow production again. And so whatever state will allow production, hopefully we can get started shooting some of our shows. But it's an interesting time. And because it's like, we're all in it, you know, like, yeah. Like the fact that I cannot get up every day and go to the office and I'm working from home is just indicative of like the world that we all live in. Like no one is doing things the same anymore.
Yeah, no, it's very true. And it's funny that you were talking about Imani and her bald head, because one thing that I always pay attention to on the show is when she's doing her makeup, like how high up she goes. Because like, I've never thought of that. Like, I'm just like, oh, yeah, that's true. I guess she would have to maybe do her makeup a little higher than other people.
Yeah, you're right. Totally right.
I'm telling you, when you watch it back now and you see her doing her makeup, you're going to notice that she goes a lot higher.
Yeah, it's so funny. I do want to go back like and watch that. I know I will say about Imani and the bald head, like one like shot that we really wanted to get season two was like her shaving her head, just because like, you know, she's just such a beautiful and just such a striking woman. And like there are very few women who can pull, men too, honestly.
People, yeah, generally off, people.
Yeah, a bald head. So like, I just remember we were like, let's see what that routine is like, you know. And she was all game. She was like, sure. Like, I remember she was like, you guys, okay, fine. And but like you're watching to see where her makeup, and like that's true. Like that viewers really do, like fans are just like excited to see all of that type of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Selena, this was so awesome. Thank you so much. I feel like we've learned a lot and you've given us so many interesting behind the scenes tidbits. Like, this is so awesome. Thank you so much.
Of course. I'm happy to talk and do this.
There's a lot going on these days, so it's likely we've all been feeling a wide range of emotions lately, from anxiety and stress to depression, grief, even relationship issues.
It has been tough, and understandably, all of this can interfere with your happiness and prevent you from achieving your goals.
Thankfully, online professional counseling through BetterHelp is here for you now more than ever.
BetterHelp is the most convenient option, with services available worldwide.
Now, we still need to practice social distancing these days, and with BetterHelp, you can talk with counselors from the comfort of your own home and connect in a safe and private online setting.
Counselors have a broad range of expertise, and BetterHelp will match you with a counselor that's right for you. The best part? You can connect with a counselor in under 24 hours.
Send them a message at any time, and you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly sessions over the phone or video call, whatever works for you.
It's so, so convenient, and you don't have to feel uncomfortable in an office or waiting room.
Plus, it's more affordable than traditional options, and financial aid is available.
So many people have been using BetterHelp. They are recruiting counselors in all 50 states.
And don't worry, if your counselor is not the right match for you, you can change free of charge at any time.
Right now, the Daily Dish listeners can get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/dish.
Take charge of your mental health and join over 1 million people who are doing the same. And remember, anything you say to a counselor is completely confidential.
Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/DISH.
Well, should we get into New York?
Yes, please. Well, I take back exactly what I said last week, and that is Tinsley left just in time because this was a mess.
They're all slurring at the beginning of this episode. And at one point, they say, like, oh, let's go to bed. What time is it? 8 o'clock. I'm like, was it really 8 o'clock or was that a joke? Because that's insane.
Let's go to bed. Ready? I want to go to bed. What time is it?
You can
it's
go
8
fun.
O'clock.
I think it probably was really 8 o'clock.
I mean, I guess it makes, like, Elise just pours vodka into a glass.
Into an enormous glass. It was like yeah. a pint glass of vodka. That is
She's
too
like,
much.
Well, I don't want a hangover. Which...
Which drinking vodka doesn't guarantee no hangover. It guarantees,
right. Just because
like,
you're not mixing left. In a soda doesn't mean you're not getting the hangover.
Well, right. Or, you know, obviously red wine, anything darker liquor wise will give you a worse hangover. But
is that true?
Yeah. Yeah. That's why a lot of people do drink vodka or like a clear liquor because the hangover, generally speaking, is less. But to the amount in which they drink, that may vary. But yeah, you can't just have a pint glass of vodka and you're like, I'm free of a hangover. It doesn't work like that.
The best was, okay, so obviously they're just getting so nasty with each other. And it's like Luann's attacking Sonia and everyone else is attacking Luann in defense of Sonia. And then we see Luann like, that's it. I'm out of here. And she's sobbing to herself as she's packing, but there are no tears. Like it's very much a, like, but there's no actual crying.
It's because number one, she's dehydrated from yeah. all the alcohol. But number two, I know for certain I have been that drunk where I am crying, but it's not actual crying. It's like you are upset, but you are not actually able to connect those emotions because you're too wasted. So you're just like fake crying because it's what you think you're supposed to be doing. But it was sad. It still was sad. And
I was
like,
not sad.
I was a little sad only because she like then stormed out and the whole storming out was like bad with like Dorinda and the door got pushed and it like for a moment it looked like it was going to get violent and I was like, oh God. But for her to be like outside waiting, I mean, I really appreciated that Leah went out there to like grab her and be like, where are you going? Like
sober, you know, so she knew what to do. She knew what the right thing to do was.
I think in these situations, as much as we have seen Leah get a little crazy, when one or two or multiple people in a group setting start turning up to a certain level, there's always one person who like falls back and they're like, okay, it's getting too crazy. Someone has to maintain a level of
I either have to sober control. Up real quick or I just got to stop drinking.
Yes. And this happened when we were away for Danny's birthday at one point on the beach on Sunday. It was like everyone was like getting to a certain level. And for me being there, I was like, okay, I'm going to just be the one to take the back seat and just like let everyone else turn up. And like, I will supervise, you know, like I will make sure everything stays okay. And I did a great job.
Good for you. So there was no tearless sobbing from you this weekend.
No, no, none of that. Thank
goodness. Do you remember what made you sob that one time?
What makes you think it was just one time, first of all? I mean, I think it's a million different things. It's not often getting into a drunk fight with a friend over something stupid, but like it'll be something else, like anything that will just like set me off. And you're like, oh my God, you're so drunk that you feel like that's all you can do. But it's very clear that you're not actually crying.
Yeah. The one thing I will say that I was just like, no, is when Luann was trying to leave. I feel like that's when bad things happen, when you're so drunk and you decide to leave the scene, let's go back to how her mugshot happened in the first place. You know, like she was out and about, and like that's just when it gets dangerous. And thank God Leah and Ramona went with her. You just can't be that inebriated and like going on about your life, you know? It's
well,
just
especially in the Berkshires. In the Berkshires, where are you going to go? You know, like there is Uber, I'm sure, available, but where are you going to go? It's the middle of nowhere. It's not like you're in New York and you can just be like, I'm leaving. I'm going to go catch a cab or hop on the subway and I'm gone. It's like you are out in the wilderness, girl. Like, do not just try to run away in this moment. Mm-mm. It's crazy, too, how the next day it is a clean slate. It is just like everyone immediately moves on. And it feels weird and a little bit like we're stuck in this cycle of getting sloppy drunk, being really mean, and then immediately apologizing, and then it's over. And it's a little bit of, where's my payoff here as a viewer? Like, what? What? Like, if it's all just swept under the rug and it's no big deal, and Luann's like, I'm so sorry, Sonia, I'm going to pay you to be in my show. I want you in my show. It's all good. And Dorinda's like, Luann, I love you. I care about you. It's all fine. Like, I want to move past it. I don't even remember. You know, it's a little bit of like, is this how you want to treat your friends? Is this how you want to hang out with your friends?
In a way, it's hilarious that, like, clearly it wasn't that big of a deal that they're able to move on just like that. But on the other hand, it's like, they realize this isn't normal, right? Sure, make up. But also maybe don't get to that angry of a place with each other. And I do feel like the Sonia thing was a valid argument. Because it's like, you're paying Sonia $225. No. No.
Yeah.
And she sort of gave some throwaway, look, we'll work on it. No, 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 no. I just wish Sonia loved herself a little bit more.
Well, you know, it's also like in wine, there is truth. So as much as they're saying the next morning, it's all good, we're fine, let's move on, I love you, we care about each other, there's probably some actual frustration, some emotions that are coming out in those moments that are legitimate, but they're just not being dealt with in the proper way. So they could have probably used more conversations the next morning to be like, why did we get so upset? Like, let's unpack that. What happened between us? Are we good now? As opposed to just being like, we're good. Let's move on. Time for brunch. You know, like it's not healthy.
Yeah. So we also get an alum in this episode, and it's Heather Thompson.
Yes. And I need your perspective on Heather, because that was a period of time that I'm unfamiliar with in the Roni timeline. And I've seen a lot of polarizing perspectives on social media about her. So I need your take.
Heather was great. But what I found compelling is it's sort of a similar situation that we're talking about with Beverly Hills earlier. Heather brought Dorinda on because they were Berkshire's neighbors.
Okay.
And so Heather Thompson had already been on the show a couple of seasons. And so she is the one that brought Dorinda on. Even though Dorinda knew the other ladies, it seemed like Heather was the one that kind of maybe talked to Bravo, like you should get her. Then they would sort of get into these really terrible arguments. And you would see like Dorinda would be so hurt. Heather would be so hurt. And Heather's last season, I was at the reunion and she and Dorinda were going at it during breaks. And it was just like the women had to be like, save it for the cameras, because I think Dorinda was talking about, oh, well, Ramona brought me on the show, just making chit chat. And Heather was like, well, and I did too. And I did too. Remember, Dorinda? I did too. And Dorinda's like, oh my God, what? Do you want my firstborn child? Like, you think I owe you forever? And they just had to be like, guys, save it. Save it.
Damn.
So it was surprising to me to see Heather. I was like, oh, wow. She and Dorinda made up, I guess.
I mean, Berkshire's friends. I guess they got to hang out in the summers. You know, they don't know a lot of people up there, maybe. But yeah, I was surprised to see her. And I was very interested to hear, because I think some people have been like, oh, Heather's back. And then other people have been like, yes, Queen Heather. And I'm like, I don't know how to feel.
I know. Yeah, no, she was great. But she was also like not really a big part of this episode.
Yeah.
I saw her husband on the subway, like right before quarantine, I want to say.
And is this her husband who was on the show, or is this a new guy?
No,
it is.
Yeah, they've been together forever.
Well, speaking of husbands that were on the show, this episode in particular made me wish that we had some house husbands that we could cut to once in a while. Like, I love that about Real Housewives of New Jersey. We love Frank. We love Joe. We love other Joe. And they spend a lot of time together. They're really funny. They're really charming. They always shoot the after show and have their own like house husband segments. And they are just such a crucial part of the Real Housewives of New Jersey. And at the moment, all of these women are pretty much single. There isn't really anyone else to cut to. There's no other stories really to be invested in. And I do love that about a lot of Bravo shows, is they are very much ensemble. There's a lot of characters to really care about. And right now with no John around, I mean, it's just a little bit like, I wish there was other people that we could just be invested in for a bit.
I agree, because like they're all dating right now. They're all single and dating. But I also feel this is a group of women that don't want to be filmed while dating, you know, like,
right.
And I think that's often why Ramona sneaks out of events and goes, you know, she doesn't want cameras following that part of her life. But that is a good lead into this conversation she had with that guy at dinner. And he was like, oh, I want to, you know, Jordan just like, get me on the dating sites. And he's like, okay. And then Ramona whispers to him, we're the top 1%. We don't go on dating sites.
I'm not the average person. The average person doesn't have 2 residences. They don't travel all the time. They don't have my social network and my entree. So online dating is very difficult for me. That's all.
Those is Ramona the top 1%? I mean, maybe.
No, I don't think Ramona is in the top 1% that she's referring to. And also, how elitist. I mean, come on.
Well, and rich people gotta fuck too, right?
Of course they do. And don't be 1 minute, you know, at the beginning of the season, we see her crying her eyes out. I want a man to hold me. And she's like bawling and she's lonely and all of this stuff. But then all of a sudden you're gonna have all of these impossible standards that someone needs to meet in order to just go on a date with you. Well, then you're gonna be alone if you don't set the bar a little bit lower.
I think she doesn't even understand that her thing to Dorinda was, it's so hard to find a guy who's not intimidated by my money. The guys that aren't going to be intimidated by it are the regular guys who are out on dating sites. It's not going to be these people you're trying to go after, because they do want an accessory, probably, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I know plenty of guys in New York who would love to be taken care of. Trust me.
Right. I mean, just go the cougar route, Ramona. Like, just find yourself a young man like this guy, William, right? That she's had around a few times this season, but then it was awkward at the Halloween dinner. I don't know what happened there. But I mean, if you just want to get laid, like, pull a Sonia and just like enjoy your time hanging out with different dudes and whatever.
And even if you do want like your next big relationship, don't rule anything out. Like, don't act like you have it figured out, because you don't right now.
She really does not.
And don't talk down to a guy who's just trying to be helpful.
Also, you need to lower your expectations, Ramona, because you had a whole segment in this episode about the shit that wouldn't flush down the toilet. So come on.
Oh, Eric, don't.
I could have used without. Don't. I could have really used without. I was like, oh, God. I was like, really? I was like, Leah's going to come in here. If I were Leah, I would have been out. I would have been like, "This, no, I'm not doing this. Sorry.
We skipped over such an important part. Leah peeing on a prince.
You said you didn't really like that prince that you met, but he most of his friends are like royalty or whatever.
How do you mind a prince?
She peed on the prince.
He was so nice. He was actually very nice. I met him in Spain.
Yeah. Right.
We hung out for a week.
Right.
He came to New York and I peed on him.
Literally?
Yeah, literally. It's not like I make a habit of peeing on people, but, you know, like, when am I going to have the chance to pee on a prince again?
Oh, my God. That's right. Oh, my
Eric,
God. This
you
is.
You ever peed on a prince?
No, I would be honored. I mean,
Your Majesty.
Well, yeah, we need to break this down, because first of all, what are the chances you're going to meet a prince anyway? Number one, just meet a prince, just in person, meet somebody who is royalty. Number two, get the chance to hook up with them, even make out with them. Like, any, that is a whole other thing. Getting the chance to then experience their fetish or whatever with them, that's some next level stuff. And that, if anyone ever questions Leah as a housewife, which I know most people don't, because most people love Leah, that alone sets her up to be a legend in housewives history.
Agreed.
What prince was it?
Yeah, I know.
Harry.
Yep.
I mean, you never know. He was a party boy at one point in his time. I don't know.
How dare you? He loves Meghan.
Oh, there was a time before Meghan, okay?
So I got the chance to interview Alex Radcliffe from Below Deck Med. I asked him about his first impressions of Bugsy and who he thinks does a better job, Bugsy or Hannah. Here's that interview.
So thank you for joining via phone, Skype, Daily Dish Podcast. It's Alex Radcliffe, everyone. How are you?
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. What is it like to be a Bravo celebrity officially?
Still hasn't hit me yet. It's still a surreal kind of feeling. It hasn't hit me. I don't know. It's still weird because if I still see people, they're talking to me about the show. I'm like, wait, you watched that? I feel like I'm in my own outside little bubble right now. But it's good. It's exciting.
Has it helped with the ladies?
It has helped with the ladies, I will say. I mean, but it's tough. You know what I mean? In a way, I like it, but a way I don't like it, because if a girl's going to talk to me or hang out with me, it's like, are you hanging out with me because who I am, or is it because you like the show? So that's like a little mental trigger I think I have right now.
So is it part of your Tinder profile?
I've never had a Tinder or Bumble or anything.
Or anything? How do you meet girls?
What do you meet them at bars? You just gotta spit some game a little bit, and that's it. I've never DM'd a girl in my life. If they reach out to me, I'll respond. I've never used a social media for anything.
Wow, you're like a unicorn.
Yeah, I know, it's not real, right? No, I like it all natural. That's it.
Yeah. Well, I want to know. Speaking of ladies, what was your first impression of Bugsy?
That she was a beautiful girl. And okay, what I really like that she comes on board. She's wearing this kind of a ridiculous jumpsuit, but you could just tell off the bat she was just a bubbly, and like she was her own person. Like she wasn't trying to be someone else. And like that was very clear to me right away how she talked. Good people's person. She was so that definitely caught my eye, her personality right away for sure.
Yeah. And then you guys finally got your first night out and you like kind of got to spend some time together. And it feels like you guys had a lot of chemistry.
Yeah. I mean, looking back at it, yeah, we definitely did. Do I remember it? No, not really that much. I remember the dinner. Everything was good. We were having our own little small convos and it was good kind of just actually talk outside of work. And then it all started going downhill when we start alcohol is involved. Next thing you know, the lights are flashing in the club. You don't even know your name anymore. But yeah, we had a good night, it looked like.
Ended with a kiss on the forehead.
Oh, man. Yep, ended with a kiss on the forehead.
Is that your go-to move?
Hey, I'm so glad, like, drunk me has, like, a little conscience of, like, of who I am. Is like, I would never put anyone, especially us drinking, like, I wouldn't go in for a kiss or anything like that, or especially if she's in her room. I don't want to make anyone uncomfortable. So she told me to give her a kiss on the forehead. I was okay. Like, you know, and my mom told me, if someone tells you to do something, go in safe doing it if you feel okay with it. So I guess in that moment, I felt okay to go in to give her a kiss on the head. And I left her room and woke up with a mean hangover.
You know, this season has been really interesting to watch. And I have to wonder, watching back, especially these last couple of episodes, were you aware of how crazy it was getting between Pete and Malia and Bugsy?
So with Pete and Bugsy, I never even knew like that. Well, she mentioned something that he's being creepy, but like, I never knew it was that, you know, that extreme, which, you know, she had all right to do what she did, tell Malia. And with Pete and Malia, yeah, I saw Malia's face, her facial reactions a lot when Pete would do things or, you know, say something under his breath or whatever. I saw it was definitely, you know, they were definitely kind of eating each other's skin at some point for sure.
Would you say that it's more typical of working on yachts, that kind of, like, you know, that kind of behavior?
So with the behavior on deck, yeah, it definitely becomes an ego thing, I would say. It's, you know, like some people might think they're more in charge of the other person. You know, some people think that they've been in the industry longer, so they think that they should have more say. So yeah, I definitely see that a lot. And in most boats, bigger boats, you see, you know, people attempting to flirt, you know, it didn't come off the right way into a healthy flirt, but, you know, you see it a lot.
But did his flirting work with Lara? They were still talking on the phone.
I guess it worked for Lara. They were still talking. So clearly they had the same, they're the same type of person, I guess. So I guess it worked on her. So
I know that so much has already happened this season. Would you say that off camera too, like your experiences on boats has been just as dramatic?
Oh, 100%.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you see just real emotions flying. That's what I can say. Like, some people try to hide their emotions being on camera and don't want to come off crazy or whatever. And, you know, they get to the point that they just can't hold it in anymore no matter what. And then you, in real life, off camera, you just see the crazy, the screaming, the weird behavior. Yeah, you see it all.
What has it been like having Malia as lead bosun?
Unbelievable. I think Malia is outstanding at her job. She's just so good at, you know, talking to us. You know, she has three guys she has to deal with for three complete different personalities, and she finds that middle ground in all of us, how to be, you know, just a good leader, and we don't take her lightly. So, and she's good shit. She's funny. She has good personality. So it was just fun. It was good to work with her. I had a good time with her, for sure.
What are your thoughts on Captain Sandy?
Yeah, Sandy's a good person too. Sandy, she's strict. You know, she wants everything done and kind of in a properly way. We're on a mega yacht, and that's how most captains are. But she's also, you know, I don't know if it shows or not, but she would come down to the crew mess, eat ice cream with us, talk, and she was a good person too. I like Sandy.
What were your thoughts when Rob and Jess sort of started getting into a relationship?
Yeah, I was happy for them. I mean, Jess would ask me, be like, hey, like, you work with him outside, you know, what do you think? I'm like, I think Rob's a great guy. I think, you know, he's a gentleman, and you should. And they're very both deep people. Like, they literally are, go on. Like, their brains just work in a different way of getting, like, their deep thoughts and one another and all these different signs or whatever. So I think they were a perfect match.
But does it ever get messy for those who are just on the sidelines watching but also working on the boat? Like these boat manses?
The only way that it becomes messy is if you don't take work, you know, work is one, relationships are two. So if you don't take that in account first, then yeah, it gets messy. People get frustrated. Oh, like, these people are acting like this when we should be doing this. So, yeah, but I mean, it's, if you find the middle ground of, you know, work and play, it's fine. Unless you're a jealous person and like someone else, that might not work. So.
And you knew Jess. You guys worked together before this.
Yeah. So me and Jess worked on a boat in West Palm together, only for a few months. So I worked with her for like under 2 months, and she was super chill. She kind of kept by her business to herself, kind of quiet, but she was just a fun personality to be around.
Yeah. What has been your worst charter experience?
The guest showed up to the boat and the boat wasn't ready because the captain didn't put the boat first and thought he could wing it. And the guests walked on the boat, and after 20 minutes, they walked right off the boat and said, we're not doing this charter. This boat's a shit show. So that's definitely the most uncomfortable situation I had going into a charter.
Yikes.
Yep.
Just like they thought it was too chaotic?
Yeah, the boat wasn't even, there wasn't even power on the boat.
Oh, yeah. Yep. That kind of takes away from the experience. Yeah.
Yep. Yep, try to get the boat fixed last minute, and they were arriving, and then just try to fix it while they got on. It's like they have to use the bathroom. They got to do shit. So it was, yeah, uncomfortable, but.
And what about outrageous charter requests?
We've had the crew do a few lap dances, strip a little bit, play a little Magic Mike to the birthday girl or whatever. Yeah, I'm the first one with the shirt off for sure, but you gotta let the dad bod hang out and just let
it go. Is it requested or you just volunteer?
Oh, it's, I you have to play the character somehow, so So it's not requested, but I go the extra mile. I'm a good person.
Yeah, that's just what you do, you know? Yeah.
Pleaser.
All right, I need to know. Who do you think is better at their job, Bugsy or Hannah?
I think they are two different type of stews. I think Hannah is more stern and it's just like kind of get your fucking shit done like now. And Bugsy is a little more relating to, you know, maybe to the crew members or to the clients that she has a different type of twist to it. I think they're both good. I just think they're just complete two different styles and it's hard to judge.
It's very diplomatic of you. I appreciate it. Who have you been talking to the most since the season ended?
I don't know. I talked to Rob a lot. I talked to Jess a lot. I talked to Malia this morning, Kiko last week, Hannah last week. I don't know. I feel like everyone's in touch with me and I'm always, you know, they'll call me, I'll call them, FaceTime, bullshit a little bit. But I talked to Malia and Rob a lot and Jess a lot. Those three, I guess.
You're just a popular guy. I get it.
You know, they need advice, and I'll just give it to them, all right?
Lastly, I just want to know, are there any moments that you are nervous to see coming up?
I'm not nervous. I'm intrigued to see what happens with me and Bugsy, kind of how that plays out. Because I obviously know, you know, how it went, like, 24-7, but I'm curious how in an hour span how things look, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting and see how, you know, how I acted in certain moments, how she acted, how things really were when I, you know, wasn't around. So, yeah, I'm very curious to kind of see what happens.
Well, I'm curious, too, and I can't wait to watch the rest of the season.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait either. From what I heard, it's going to be the most drama season of ever and Below Deck, so it's gonna start spicing up soon.
Whoop, whoop. Thank you so much for joining and doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Below Deck Med.
Yes. Oh, so much vegan shaming in this episode.
The other one is dairy, gluten-free, and vegan.
That's stupid.
I'm not a vegan chef.
Yeah, and I think that you and I had the same feeling, which is like when they find the vegans finally did get their dinner, it was mushrooms.
I know. I love mushrooms, and it's a great alternative when you are vegan or vegetarian, but like there are
other... Put it on something. You're like, you're not just giving someone like a beef patty ever, you know? Like, you gotta do something with it. Put some carbs on that.
Right. Did he just want a side of like sautéed mushrooms with nothing?
Yeah, I can't imagine someone would ask.
Not even spinach? Like, throw some spinach in there or something. I don't know. These guests were a little too much for me too, but they were more bearable than the last crew. So I was like, okay.
By far. Did you feel like Pete got his in this episode?
Yes and no. And I'll tell you why. So I think the first conversation we see is between him and Captain Sandy. And I appreciate everything Captain Sandy said. She put him in his place in a lot of ways, but then there was no consequence until Malia spoke with him. And that's when Malia was like, as your bosun, like, I'm demoting you because your actions are unacceptable. You need more than just a warning that this isn't okay, because she's already spoken to him at least once before. So with same as Captain Sandy about stop calling a sweetheart, like be respectful. So I like that he finally got a consequence for his actions and it came from Malia and not Captain Sandy, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think that I felt like both of them dealt with it well. I felt bad for Bugsy. And that I feel like it's kind of the onus is on the person in her position. Like, I don't want to say victim necessarily, but you know what I'm saying. Like, she was the target of a lot of those comments. And it's like, she's in a spot where she kind of has to say, yeah, let's move on. It's like, let's second chances. Because if she doesn't, then people are going to look at her as the problem. Like, what, you know, right. He apologized. But like, I just don't find apologies to be effective for me. Like, sometimes it's nice, but like, it doesn't really do anything for me when someone apologizes.
Right. And I do think Bugsy's point about redemption and second chances is important because you do need to leave people room to grow. But yeah. To your point about apologies is actions often speak louder than words. And apparently now we're going to see new nickname Professional Pete show up in, you know, the future as someone who can handle being a pro and like do his job and not be offensive at every given second. So I appreciate that, but it is true. It was sort of like Bugsy was in a weird position. I appreciate that he apologized to her, but we have to see that in the rest of this season. Hopefully he doesn't say anything or do anything else that we've seen him do already.
Right.
I don't know. I want to talk about poor little Jess
and her
finger.
Ugh.
Which that is going to make the next how many weeks? She said at least 2 weeks. Very, very challenging. And I felt really bad for her when this guy, I don't think he was the primary charter guest. I think it was one of the others. He was like very particular about his stuff being unpacked.
Sorry. Hi. Actually, great with just this one being unpacked.
Just that one. Okay. Yeah.
And
perfect.
Could you make sure that I get either an iron or a steam room or a steam?
Perfect. Okay.
That'd be great. Thank you.
You're welcome. How do you not feel guilty? I have a broken finger and you want me to unpack your luggage? Is that necessary?
But if you are that particular about your stuff, wouldn't you want to do it yourself? Like, would you want a stranger touching all of your things? Especially then after you see she's injured and she's like on the floor and he's like, actually, can you unpack this one, not the one you're working on? Like, come on.
Well, you know who demands that people unpack her? Ramona.
Yep. Oh, well, yeah. That makes sense.
So, you know, I'm sure from their perspective, like, I'm paying a lot. Unpack me. If I want it, give it to me.
Like, organizing it, like, knowing what needs to be hung versus what needs to be folded. I mean, I'm so particular. Like, I know a lot of people in New York, they send their laundry out to be done, and they have it delivered back, and they're totally fine with it. It's just, it's a more, you know, time-effective way to do it. But I don't like people touching my things.
That's interesting. Yeah, I for a while was having my laundry sent out. They almost fold it too tight. They fold everything real tight. And then when you unfold it, it's just like very wrinkled.
I wonder if it's because I'm an only child, so I'm used to having all of my own stuff. So I just like don't want people to touch my things.
Did you even do your own laundry as an only child?
I did not until I went away to college. And the very first time I tried to do laundry, I put all of my clothes in the dryer and poured detergent on them and then turned it on and realized it was the dryer.
Oh my God.
I know.
You're like a real house kid of Beverly Hills. Kim, you poor woman doing everything for this person.
Well, and now my mom is like desperate to do my laundry. Like if I go visit her, she comes here, she's like, do you need me to do that? I'm like, no. Like I got it. I got it under control now. Thank you.
I had to do laundry for the whole family. Well, the folding. I was basically Cinderella.
Oh, my God.
I know. Can you imagine?
No. What do you do for laundry now?
I do it.
Do you do it in your place or do you send it out?
No, I do it in my building.
Speaking of things that we do, I also wanted to give you an update on a few messages I got from listeners about sleeping arrangements and sharing covers. Mm-hmm. A few people
are on your side.
Yes, they reached out. They are on my side. Two people reached out saying that they do the same thing with their husbands, that they have different blankets. One of them said that it's actually like culturally a thing in Iceland, which I have yet to confirm, but maybe it's more of a common practice in Scandinavia. I don't know.
Yeah, this might be a hindrance to me finding my next person, is that I'm like, no, we shall hold each other
all night.
All night.
Nope. I got people who were like, separate covers, 68 degrees all night long, perfect time. Let me start.
I just like to be cuddled so hard that I can't escape.
I wonder what that really says about you. Like, there's something
there. I
know,
I'm a needy son of a bitch.
Okay, you want to do Rose and Thorn?
Yes.
Okay, let's do Rose and Thorn.
Okay, what was your rose?
My rose was that Camille every day gets to wake up to a view of seals outside her window. I want seals. I love seals.
That is a gorgeous, gorgeous view to wake up to. Like most of the time we only get ocean views when we go and stay at like really nice hotels. Can you imagine if that was every day?
I want it. What was your rose?
My rose was also from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and it was the shoes that Sutton wore to Kyle's party. And I think I've realized that she is to me as Dorit is to you. Like, oh. I just feel like her style, everything about her has really grown on me this season. And I just appreciate her in kind of like the way that I used to appreciate Erica. Not that I don't still, but, you know, I came on the podcast doing that most Erica Jane moment of the week. And now I feel like Sutton is worthy of such a segment. And so I'll give her shoes that she wore to the party. The black and white, there was like a feather in them. Oh, so cool. What was your thorn?
Well, speaking of fashion, my thorn came from Real Housewives of New York, and it was this one interview outfit Leah's wearing. It's like a superhero costume, but like not in a good way, like from a cheap store. What is that? That's not a dress, is it?
I don't know what it is below, but it is interesting that it fully connects all the way to the gloves.
I hate it. I hate it. I hate it.
It's funny, too, because we had early on this season, I had been talking to Leah and something about Jem and the holograms came up. And I was like, oh, my God, Jem and the holograms should be your inspiration for one of your interview looks like later on this season. She was like, oh, my God, yes, that's such a great idea.
So and you're so responsible for that monstrosity.
Well, no, because that's not really a Jem and the holograms type of outfit. Like, I don't really know what that is. It honestly reminds me of something that like Katy Perry might wear, you know, like something just like quirky and a little campy. But it is quite unique
something
for sure. But I was waiting all season for like a Jem and the holograms look, and it just, you know, didn't come.
Still waiting,
Leah. My thorn comes from Married to Medicine Los Angeles, and it is the very strange entertainment that Jasmine had at her party. There was like this bubble dancer in her pool that didn't really make sense. This pretty terrible Mariah Carey impersonator that I was like, do not disrespect my queen. But I will exclude the gospel choir that came down the stairs and performed at the end of the episode because they were incredible. So it was really just the bubble dancer. Because then Leah fell and hit her head too. It was like a whole thing.
She almost hit her head.
But the gospel choir, great job.
We'll be back with an all new episode on Saturday.
Megan, it's hot, it's summer, and we are still stuck at home.
And your problem with that is, you know what I love to do from the comfort of my own home?
What's that?
I like to binge watch Bravo shows.
And now you can watch some of your favorite Bravo shows, including full seasons on Peacock.
Peacock is NBC Universal's new streaming service, and it's chock full of Bravo content.
You can stream full seasons of Below Deck, Below Deck Med, Southern Charm, and The Real Housewives of Dallas today.
You can learn more at peacocktv.com. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 9. And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy, miss me, kiss.